Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on? This is the In Plain English Book Club. Thank you so much for checking us out in regards to this. And this is actually our first installment of the actual book club. And we're actually doing for the first book, The Discipline Life. So that's the actual book that we're doing. Let's see, the chat room right now is populating up to see if there's anybody in there. Very powerful book. This book is entitled The Discipline Life, The Mark of Christian Maturity by Richard S. Taylor. And we currently are in we finished chapter one, and we'll be starting chapter two probably tomorrow. But, I mean, I got quotes, and I got questions. And I definitely really got my socks knocked off with this. It's definitely something that even in these few pages that I read, the first few pages, you have explosive quotes and just serious challenges. One thing that really stood out to me, I guess that's what we should do, is one thing that stood out to us is that you can be talented and you can be, brilliant, or you can be good at specific things, but if you don't have discipline, specifically in your character, you can end up losing everything. That's something that really stood out to me chapter one. Just how easy it is to actually have things unraveled, if you don't have control of yourself, and if you're not consistent. And it talks about, too, the world itself belongs to the discipline. That's the first sentence. Like, whoa, the world itself belongs to the discipline. And it talks about just American nature, American culture, aspects that America feverishly is aiming to get ahead materially in all, but in it all, the American works feverishly to get ahead materially, but in it all, he is determined to have his pleasures. He wants to eat his cake and have it too. So what you have is an example of the danger that many of us are surrounded by. It goes on to talk about how the American world loves to play. It talks about how, nations won't, the nation that produces the most scientists and educators will dominate the world, not the nation that produces the best sportsmen. I was like, wow. And I kept on thinking about America and just how really fun and cool and goofy and quirky and, how we can push a lot of trends and create all kinds of wonderful things. But also, it did make me think of other cultures that really are hard and harsh. And I don't want to say harsh, but are intense in the areas and the arenas of discipline. You definitely see it. But what I'm going to do is, I guess, go through chapter one, if I see any folks in here, or if not, go through chapter one, go through the introduction as well, and just go over my the quotes that stood out to me, which is pretty much what I'm doing right now. Another thing, too, that stood out, too, was how Richard talked about the dangers of, of being kind-hearted. And in chapter 1, he talks about kind-heartedness is a virtue when coupled with moral stability. Without discipline, kind-heartedness becomes a sentimental weakness. No nation has survived that has become self-indulgent and flabby. There is no reason to hope that Western nations that discard disciplined living will prove an exception. And, you know, self-explanatory speaks that for itself. And then the next section in chapter 1 talks about personal power. And it talks about, okay, not just the nation will be successful, or not only not just being successful politically, but, you know, he says in every realm, the race belongs to the disciplined. Let's see, on page 21. In the battle of ideas, the disciplined man has advantages over the scatterbrain. A trained mind can evaluate evidence, think logically, select ends, and devise means. It can concentrate on essentials and discard the irrelevant. A trained mind can think more rapidly and also more accurately. At the same time, the man with a ready mind is more apt to express himself coherently and persuasively. So, right there. There it is right there. There's an example of it right there that if your mind's not disciplined, your communication is going to be off. You're not going to say what you mean to say. You're not going to communicate at the right moment, at the right time, in the right way, not swiftly, not quickly, not on a dime. You'll be sluggish and ineffective and unproductive. What else? And not just in your aspect of communication, the evaluation of evidence. So taking in information, processing it, and then returning a result or respond or reaction to the information. And I think definitely, I could definitely grow definitely in that particular aspect of my life. Better, being quicker, being more agile with my thought. What else? It also says, just like I said, logically select ends, devise means. A trained mind can think more rapidly and also more accurately, less mistakes. So again, looking at this, you would think, man, this is the kind of person I want working for me. This is the kind of person I want to partner with. This is the kind of person that you would want to have in your life, not the scatterbrain person. Regardless of how nice, kind, or sweet they are, they can pose a threat and a liability to a particular company. It talks about too, these particular people that aren't disciplined, you know, and don't have that personal power of discipline, are outclassed. That are left, they're left slowly left behind. And before they realize it, you know, they're utterly and completely dominated. Let's read page 21. The end of page 21, the beginning of page 22 here. Consequently, the man whose mind is undisciplined will soon be outclassed and outdistanced by others in whatever field he enters. Right there, you're being set apart. You're being separated. And you can't, that's not something you can say, this is unfair. No. Discipline is something that every person has access to, meaning every person can tap into. It's not something that is mutually exclusive for particular individuals. Anyone can be disciplined, which is reassuring, which gives hope. It's not like, it's over before it begins. Everybody can be disciplined. which is, to me, is reassuring. But nonetheless, sometimes those situations have everything to do with people, the situations with people being left behind. I believe what Richard is saying, or Mr. and Richard Taylor in chapter one is saying, that these have to do with not putting in the work, the pain, aching, ugly, gritty, gutty work day in and day out to where you can actually be so used to it and so disciplined and so sharp that you can act quickly. Going on, it says, he will find himself not only on the lower scale economically, but dominated socially by those who are more efficient. And trust me, reading this, one part of me was like, oh, yeah, this sounds great. Then another part of me was thinking, well, what about the people that cheated other people, people that, killed other people, took things from other people, had financial, had, parents to provide specific things to them that other people didn't have. What about those people? I thought, when I was reading it, the thought triggered in my mind. And really, this has to do with that particular group of people, because oftentimes we hear this kind of stuff a lot. Like, well, you're not successful because you're lazy. You're not successful because you're not trying hard enough. You're not successful because X, Y, you did this, that, and the third. And a lot of times it doesn't really, when they're saying that, it's not really, the people that are bringing up those particular grievances, oftentimes it's not about, from what I've seen, it's not about them really caring about, doing things right. It often is somebody who didn't work, who actually got things given to them by their parents. So I pretty much leave those particular things alone. But for this particular situation that the author is speaking about on page 21 and 22, it talks about, I believe, two similar people, same opportunity, same situation. One person goes left, the other person goes right. And because the one person chose to do the right thing, they in the end get rewarded back the fruit that they received back from the seed that they planted. I think that's essentially what the author is saying. Now, I could be wrong, and hopefully in the group either later on this evening, or next time we discuss, they'll have something to say about that. But it talks about how not being disciplined mentally, you can end up putting yourself in some serious trouble with specific people. For instance, page 22, another great example, masterminds know how to manipulate the unthinking masses to the perpetuation of their own power. The undisciplined mind is always an easy prey for the demagogue and the charlatan. So there's wisdom associated with discipline. When your mind's disciplined, you're able to separate specific things. When someone's snowing you or playing intellectual games, so on and so forth. Now, here's the issue. Now, for Christians, Should our glory and our strength be there, or should we stand on these particular things and get ourselves worth on the ability to be able to figure out if someone's playing intellectual games with us? No, the battle's God's. But I mean, the scriptures do say, now speaking to the Christians, the scriptures do say that we need to be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves, And I think if you're disciplined in your mind, I believe these things will be, they'll be completely transparent and clear. But again, you know, these are things we don't deal with. But if we're not dealing with our laziness, dealing with our sloth, dealing with, you know, a lot of times our indifference to specific things, we set ourselves up for trouble. What else? What else stood out to me in the chapter? It talks about training your body to serve your mind. I mean, who doesn't struggle with that? Eating that extra cookie, not drinking enough water, not working out on a consistent basis, going to bed at a certain time, getting up at a certain time. Who doesn't constantly every day have to keep watch over themselves? Or at one time in their life had to get to a point where things were working like clockwork. And he says it's of less importance. It can be indispensable to power if its object is to train the body to serve the mind and attaining of worthy objectives. And he gives examples of Thomas Edison, how he only slept 4 hours a day. What is it? No. He didn't say sleep 4 hours a day. He said to sleep and awaken at will and to work through grueling, unbroken stretches undoubtedly contributed to his greatness as an inventor. There's another example where he used Wesley as an example, where he would get up at 4 o'clock. Maybe that's where the 4 is coming from. He'd get up at 4 o'clock and then preach at 5 daily, you know. Well, there it is, page 23. We do know that John Wesley ascribed his preservation to the practice of rising at 4 o'clock and preaching at 5. Though such a routine was short rather than extend the life of some men, particularly in this age of late nights and disciplined avoidance of that kind of Wesleyanism, might be wiser. It is still true that the man who learns to keep his body under is more likely to avoid being not only a castaway spiritually, but a castaway physically. Talks about that. I mean, it's important. It says, he also says, which I like this, the advantage of a man, this is page 22, with a disciplined body is most apt to be seen in a superior health and longevity. His better health will give him greater efficiency and effectiveness, while added years will extend his fruitfulness and power. Pretty much self-explanatory. This is what I was talking about actually at the beginning. But if one is weak as a person, let me jump up really quick. This is page 23. We talked about a disciplined man and a disciplined mind and a disciplined body. Actually, of course, these are but adjuncts of a disciplined character. So then, this is something I feel like, is this what the entire chapter is about? That we're pointing to all these other things on the outside of us that actually point to what's really going on the inside of us, which is our character, right? And is that where all these things come from, you know, lack of self-control with the body, the lack of the scatterbrainedness, you know, the disorder, lack of organization, like all these other things that are going on, do they all point to the fact that we don't have character and we don't draw the line in the sand and say, this for no further. I'm going to have an organized, orderly house. I'm going to, you know, eat this particular amount and no more. I'm going to constantly train my mind to be sharp, like a laser, sharp as a scalpel and focused like a laser, to get the desired results and to be able to effectively communicate. Or sometimes it's communicate, sometimes it's process information. Sometimes, it's not as deep as, high level business. Sometimes it's just being a good friend, being a good father, being a good mother, being a good daughter, being able to, being a good son, a niece, a nephew, being able to actually effectively give someone your very best, you know? And I think that's really, I like that. I like that in this actual chapter, how I feel like, is that what it is? Is it that character? That regardless of how high you go, if your character is not right, it's going to pull you down to utter destruction. And he talked about, just again, the time, effort, and energy to be able to, let's say, you know, body control to swing a golf club a specific way or to shoot a ball a certain way or to be, you know, operate on people in a specific way. But, like, if your character's messed up, meaning, like, he gave an example of a doctor where, you know, he had a drinking problem and an immorality problem where, in the end, it cost him his reputation, then his practice, then his life. And, and he said, and certainly his soul as well. So that's something, too, that's very interesting because, again, what do they call 30 for 30s? I think it's 30 for 30s that where they talk about prior basketball players or prior football players and then where are they now? Or they even do the VH1, where are they now? And now these people that actually used to be musicians or artists or people that spent days after days studying music. And he uses another example in the chapter where an instructor had a specific amount of students that ended up leaving. Igor Gorin, a famous Ukrainian-American baritone. He was over a specific group of singers. And he said his class started out full and then got down to about two people because, again, people's lives got in the way of them meeting a particular goal. Meaning, you know, he used examples of, I mean, with some of this stuff, I don't know. He said some fell in love, some got married, some just became weary of the monotony and regimentation. Others became homesick and returned home. Finally, the ranks were thinned down to a very, very few, you know. In the interview, Mr. Gorin related a personal experience. He said that he had loved to smoke a pipe, but one day his professor of voice said to him, "Igor, you'll have to make up your mind whether you're going to be a great singer or a great pipe smoker. You cannot be both." So the pipe went. This is that example. This is an example that there's certain things that have to be put aside if you have a specific goal that you want to reach and attain. You can't, from what I feel like the author's trying to say, like you can't just be idle with your hand out. Like you've got to go get it Monday through Monday. Monday, 24 hours a day. I mean, maybe not 24 hours a day because you have to sleep, but you got to go get it, whatever it is. And not just that, you have to attack it on every angle. So you can't just be, like what he said in chapter one, you can't just be disciplined. Like you can't be good at, like, be like a $172 million baseball player. Contract baseball. Sign a $172 million baseball contract and have like a drug habit, you know, or be an alcoholic, or have different aspects about yourself that are off. Be a philanderer. Be someone that, you know, that fools around, so on and so forth. You know, because these things, I mean, and we have examples. We've seen examples of that. These things, they come back to tear down all that hard work, all those years of investment, all those hours of swinging the bat to have to have things taken, have to, you know, be reduced to specific levels and stuff. And to me, that I feel like that's kind of a far off example. I mean, it could be something as simple as being a good teacher, you know, being someone, whatever, being a good insurance salesperson. You know, you have to make sure whatever you're doing, from what I see, in general, whatever you do, you're covering all the bases. You're working on your mental discipline, working on your physical discipline. You know, working on your character, your personal character. You know, fighting those wrong urges, those bad urges that we all have. So I definitely think, for me at least, this is actually this one chapter, these few pages. This is about a 3-hour discussion. There's so many different topics. Topics in this actual chapter. I mean, of course, you'll just have to read. You have to read and check out later on. I'll be posting some of my favorite quotes in the group on Facebook. But I mean, this stuff is really this is some legit stuff, man. This is some really good stuff. I'm excited to see what chapter 2 has in it, and by the time we get around to our next discussion, I think we'll be right at either in chapter 3 or on chapter 4. Yeah, coming up, we'll be in chapter 4, where it says suffering does not sanctify. But what I'll go ahead and do, we'll go ahead and end the time now, but we'll end with probably one of my favorite quotes out of the book. One of the numerous favorite quotes. But I'll read this one and then we'll go ahead and end it out here. This is on page 25. Disciplined character belongs to the person who achieves balance by bringing all his faculties and powers under control. There are order, consistency, and purpose in his life. As a result, he has poise and grace. He doesn't panic, nor does he indulge in maddling self-pity, which, when tossed by cross currents, he rises courageously, even heroically, to meet life and conquer it. He resolutely faces his duty. He is governed by a sense of responsibility. He has inward resources and personal reserves, which are the wonder of weaker souls. He brings adversity under tribute and compels it to serve him. When adversity becomes too overwhelming and blows fall which he cannot parry, he bows to them, but is not broken by them. His spirit still soars. Thanks so much for participating in this book discussion. We'll be speaking with you in about 2 days. That's all for now.